I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This month, Streaming Things is brought to you by our super Patreon supporters, Chester Copperpot, Jade, Jillian Morgan, Aaron Layton, Andrew Gray, Casey McCain, Crystal Trujillo, Jen Robinson, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate, Kiki Newton, and Will Nash.
Hey now, you're an all-star. I didn't know if I should come in. I have no idea.
I like how you came in like, I'm going to sing the theme, but I don't know the words. But it is my job to sing the song.
No. I was correct to do that because success in this world, at least in this country, Steve, is mostly based on pure audacity.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Pure audacity. But also, sorry.
That's wonderful.
Welcome back.
We would like to formally apologize to Smash Mouth.
And welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, a very special episode because the winner of the Q contest that we had a while back, Julia P, was allowed to pick one movie that we had to watch and cover and break down on this show. And that movie that she chose was Mystery Men from 1999, a film that single-handedly lifted up the year of 1999 into being widely considered one of the best years for film ever.
The Mayans had said the world was going to end in 99, but Mystery Men came by and said, nay.
Mm-mm, not yet.
Not for a few more years.
With our bowling ball skull heads.
First, you guys got to watch this. Mm-hmm. Watch this. And so what we'll do, the way that if you're new to the show, we're going to break this down. But at first, we're going to talk about our overall thoughts, just kind of our experience rewatching and any history that we have with the film. And then we'll go into a breakdown and hopefully have some fun, make some jokes about watching the movie because we all just watched it today. That's how we do this on this show. So if you're new, what a weird time to hop in, but welcome.
Mystery Men.
We also covered The Rings of Power and House of the Dragon. And we're actually recording this as we wait for House of the Dragon episode 4 to pop off.
And this is a very special episode because we're going to be doing a lot more of these type of episodes in the future because one of the new bonus Patreon tiers for our Patreon is that level can actually dictate an episode. Mm-hmm. On the main feed of what we cover, movie, film, property. And this is kind of the inaugural episode of that. Inaugural. So expect more of these quote unquote chosen episodes in the future.
And so bon anniversaire to all of you out there.
Andy just taught us French words.
He drew us like one of his French girls.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were recording a happy birthday message to a little girl and she's learning French. And so, yes, I taught them bon anniversaire.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Sydney. So any hoozle. Let's get right into it. So Mystery Men, what is your history with this film? Had you guys seen it before? Steve, start us off.
I have to be honest with you. When she nominated Mystery Men as the film to cover, I literally leapt out of my chair. and like did a couple of these fist bumps, you know?
He did. And some pirouettes.
So Mystery Men, when I was growing up, was one of those movies that was always on in the background in my home. I loved it so much. It was just like, it hit me right at that right age of like silly, you know, little boy comedy, you know, oh, there's farts. Ha ha ha. And so like, and I haven't seen this movie.
Paul Rubens farts.
And those are a special type of farts.
They are. Yeah,
the fragrance, my God. So getting to kind of revisit this movie that I watch so often and, you know, watching it with the eyes of my adult self, you know, I'm much more wizened.
Yes.
I'm wise. I know these actors so much better. So like kind of seeing the world through, you know, the year 1999 through the year 2022, it was just such, so much fun. And I forgot how many of the lines and dialogue that are in this that I would repeat in my daily life. And it was just a blast. So I'll just thank you for nominating this film. I had so much fun revisiting it, and I'm excited to kind of talk with it, with you guys.
Andy, do you have any history with Mystery Men?
I saw it way back in the day when I was like 12, and I loved it at the time. But more than that, I had history with the trailer. Like, I feel like they promoted the hell out of this movie. And so it's burning my brain.
Me too.
I'm invisible. Can you see me? And like, you might want to put your pants on if you want to keep fighting crime and all that. Like, that was like when this got nominated, I was like, I'm pretty sure I used to love this movie, but I really only remember the trailer and Smash Mouth. And like, that was it. And I knew that it had like a star studded cast, but like it came and went for like my cultural like awareness in my teenage years, and then I never went back. So it was a lot of fun to go back to it.
Absolutely. I'm kind of like Andy. I definitely saw this movie probably two or three times, but I have not seen it since I was 11 or 12 years old. And I watched it at the time because I was such a, it's so funny thinking back now, I was such a huge fan of the Kenan and Kel show. Yeah. And specifically, you know, Kel is in this movie.
Kel's going rightly so.
Who loves orange soda? I do. Is it true? Mm-hmm. I do. Huge fan of that. Yeah. So that's why I watched the movie. And I also liked Ben Stiller because I knew him from Heavyweights at the time. You know what I mean? And of course,
that's a great movie, man.
It's so funny. Just in the pantheon, Ben Stiller's career, there was a point in time where people were like, oh, is that the guy from Heavyweights?
That's the guy from Heavyweights, man. I got to watch this movie. And it had Pee Wee Herman in it. So I was like, This is the trifecta of wonder that I have to watch. But it was so
funny.
Were
you still too young to appreciate the Hank Azaria of it all?
I definitely was.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
I had no knowledge of Tom Waits, you know, like all of that was over my head. I was a weird kid. So I actually was pretty familiar with Janine Garofalo because I was a huge stand-up fan as a kid. But yeah, so I think it's interesting now, not just being in my 30s and revisiting this movie, but now I think it works so much better. Oh, definitely. I didn't know who Jeffrey Rush was. So I, you know, none of that hit. Yeah. None of that hit like it should have.
Eddie Izzard.
I actually knew Eddie Izzard as well. I was a big fan of hers from the stand up as well. But so I rewatching it now, it was always satire, right? It's based on the comics. But none of that hit me at the time. It was just like this goofy ass movie.
It's incredibly loosely based off a comic book.
Yes.
Flaming Carrot, I think, is the actual comic book title. And there's like only like three characters from the comic that they pull into this.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. And they're like background characters. I think I think it's the Shoveler, Mr. Fury, and
Blue Raja?
Mr. Furious. No, Blue Raja is completely created for the movie. But yeah, I think there's only like three of, maybe the Invisible Boy are the only ones that are like from the original comic.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, but
what's cool now is like at the time in 1999, we had some superhero movies, of course, like Tim Burton's Batman. We have Richard Donner's Superman movies and a few others, but for the most part, it was nowhere near what it is now. So I think it works as like an incredibly goofy and effective satire in the lens that I have now, just being inundated with so much superhero content constantly. That I had a blast with watching around this time.
This movie is so ahead of its time.
It really is.
Because a lot of the jokes work. There are jokes you can see happening. And because, I mean, lampooning superhero things is not novel anymore. But
yeah, they're lampooning like Superman, you know, like there wasn't a ton of. And what year did Batman come out? I think like
89.
OK, so like they're lampooning the stuff that came way before the world that we know of as superheroes now. So it's crazy how different it hits.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because, you know, like I said, it's ahead of its time. It's lampooning superhero movies, but it's doing it. Cause I mean, if they made this movie today, it would just end up being The Boys. Right. But because this movie was made like shortly after Joel Schumacher's run of Batman films, it has a lot of Joel Schumacher, Tim Burton, DNA in it, like visually and like the comedy bits that are working. And I think that that creates this like beautiful little marriage of the two, of this lampooning superheroes, but also they're using the visual cues from a ridiculous, serious, quote unquote, superhero films. Yeah. Right.
And there's some really smart stuff in here as well, even though it gets, it's really intentionally dumb at times as well. But like the, and again, I wasn't familiar with Greg Kinnear as a kid, but now I just get a huge kick out of that. And the fact that he's got like a Pennzoil and a Pepsi badge on his superhero outfit, like it's got a lot of like Mike Judge flavor to it that I was really happy with. So I was doing some research. And it was written by Neil Cuthbert and co-written by Bob Burden, who I assume did the comics.
Yeah.
And Neil Cuthbert, his pedigree is such the Pluto Nash movie.
Well, he didn't get where he's not a writer anymore because of Pluto Nash. I don't think he.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
But also Hocus Pocus.
Hey, hell yeah.
The classic. Heck yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And I didn't see The Return of Swamp Thing. Did either of you from 1989?
Mm-mm. I didn't even see Swamp Thing.
But that's mostly what he's known for.
I
did not
know I needed to wait for his return.
Exactly. So yeah, Hocus Pocus, big fan of that. And it was directed by Kinka Usher. I don't know how to pronounce that, if I'm doing that correctly. Haven't seen any of those movies either.
He's only directed like one major film. This is his only like major film he's ever directed. He's a commercial director.
Yeah, I read that too. That's
The Volvo showroom. Heck yeah. Nissan toys.
Classic.
Big fan.
Apparently, the production of this movie was kind of not great. A lot of the actors have said like it was kind of a mess to work on, and I think this director who's comes from commercials, he doesn't do movies anymore because he was like, I hated working on this movie. It was like way too much bullshit, and it's actually like a major production for like a first time director.
Yeah,
you know, if this movie was made today, it clearly has a big budget. Not only because of the cast, but there are like some, for the time,
great special effects,
great set design, great costuming. There's a lot. You can see the money on screen with this 1999 money, right?
No, for sure.
It looks just
I'm laughing,
good.
Not at what you're saying. I just had a vision of Ben Stiller with his like little flame outfit and just kind of stomping around.
I'm so mad. But I mean, this movie looks just as good, if not better, than like the first X-Men movie from like 2001.
Yeah, it was a couple of years before X-Men kind of revitalized the superhero film industry. And then, you know, almost a decade before Iron Man from 2008. So way ahead of its time, even in its spoofiness. I had a blast with it. Who was your favorite character before we get really deep down? I'm just because I have one. I think it's a hot take who I think carried this movie.
Okay. I also feel like, so who I think is the anchor of this movie, and this movie would not work nearly as well without this person, is William H. Macy,
yes! The Shoveler. That is my take as well.
Because he is one, he plays this character so earnest.
Straight.
So straight. And it makes all the scenes he's in so much funnier because, and he's so genuine. Like you can tell like all the, like he's playing this 100%. He's not like doing a wink at the camera or anything.
Never.
He's like, no, this is serious, guys. We are superheroes.
Never in a million years would I have thought, I would think the thought that it was Mystery Men from 1999 that made me truly appreciate the brilliance of William H. Macy. You know, there's Fargo, all that, you know, I'm just like, man, there's Shameless. He's done great work as Frank Gallagher. But I was watching this movie like, dude, Shoveler is carrying this fucking movie upon his shovel.
Like
Magnolia, that's my favorite performance of William H. Macy's.
Yeah,
it's Mystery Man, man.
Yeah, he is so, especially like when the Mr. Furious wants to come back to the gang, and they have the Have you seen my address book? He's like, man,
what's it look like?
You should probably try to think the last place you saw it. And just like the way he's delivering those lines,
yes,
I'm dying.
Or when he goes so back funny. To his wife is the scene I was thinking of, where actually like it had some like pathos to it. Like when she's like, I'm not going to be here when you get back, and he's like, that's fair. I understand that, but there might not be a world left if I don't do this. You know? He's like, just like straps his shovel to the back.
He was channeling like the more earnest moments of like Adam West's Batman. It was great.
Yeah. Mm.
Was he your favorite as well, Andy?
No, I would have to say Blue Raja was my favorite.
Blue Raja is a close second for like the most fun.
Exactly.
When he switched, like, I had forgotten everything about this movie. When he switched to his like American, almost Jersey accent, I was like, what?
Mom, you're breaking so many rules right now.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, do the accent.
Yeah, like everyone, all the actors, because these are just some of the great, this movie is a character actors movie, right? Everyone in it is just a really great character actor. They're all crushing it. And, but really you're right. Like without the shoveler there, there's just almost too much chaos, but he really, it's amazing how much that character really pulls everyone together and ties everything. He's Blue. It does not work without him.
I honestly, for the longest time I was like, in what universe did Jeffrey Rush agree to do the sequel to Pirates of the Caribbean? Right. And then I find out as an adult that he was in Mystery Men 1999 as
Casanova Frankenstein.
Casanova Frankenstein as a German guy.
And you can tell Jeffrey Rush is maybe possibly having the most fun out of everybody on screen.
With the pinky.
And the camera was strapped to the pinky POV.
Pinky cam?
I lost that pinky cam, of course.
Oh, yeah. He's having a ball. That's why I love him in the Stiller. Jeffrey Rush is just amazing.
He climbed the forks to save his gal.
Yeah.
I love Jeffrey Rush's reaction. What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Like he's just exasperated.
Do you guys want to feel awful for a moment?
I love that. Awful. Yes,
so a big part of this movie. So the movie comes out in 1999. A big part of Casanova Frankenstein and Eddie Izzard's gang, the Disco Boys, is because he's been in prison for 20 years. What was 20 years from 1999? The disco period, right? The 70s. Guess what's 20 years removed from Mystery Men?
Oh, shit.
More than this timeline. This is almost, what, 14 years ago when this movie came out? Yeah. Doesn't that make you, or not, I'm sorry, 20,
25 20, years
I can't
ago?
Count, yeah. Yeah, so there is much time has passed between the there has been much time between the era of disco to Mystery Men as there has been Mystery Men
our childhood to now.
Yeah, so there's more time since it came out to now than there was from when it came out to disco. Gotcha.
Yeah,
yeah, we're old.
That's fucked.
Because I remember watching this movie like, man, disco is so antiquated. Like, why are they so into disco? These old guys, and now it's like, oh shit, I get it. Because I'm
people
still
that made it were disco guys. So yeah, like remember how much fun we had back then? God.
I mean, we're literally like Lord of the Rings nerds, and that was
we were just happily singing Smash Mouth at the opening of this, and we're like, "This is a bop, right, guys?
Dude, Smash Mouth is our disco."
Oh my god,
Smash Mouth is our Bee Gees. What?
Smash who? You're an all-star.
Get your game on and go play.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, now you're a rock star. I forget the rest of the words.
Oh, now who's judging who?
Hey, I didn't come in
hot. Who's dropping singing balls? Well, so the IMDb describes Mystery Men thusly. A group of inept amateur superheroes must try to save the day when a supervillain threatens to destroy a major superhero and the city. That's the description there. And can I just say, I did really, really enjoy this viewing, but I was shocked that the runtime of this movie was not 87 minutes.
And same.
And was in fact 2 hours and 1 minute.
And it was trimmed down from a much longer cut. There are a ton of deleted scenes that you can watch of this movie.
I was shocked.
Yeah.
Cause I paused at one point. Cause that's why I didn't take the extensive notes. Unless I watch something at your house, Steve, all movies will be watched holding a tiny bebe who is probably taking its abnormally large head and swinging it randomly to one side. So I have to be ready for that.
Strap a pencil to your baby's head.
I should have named her Kamikaze because she's just like, I'm like, what are you doing? Why did you do that? She tries to jump off my chest.
Remember me.
So that's what I was doing. But anyway, I stood up to like, you know, get her bottle or something and paused it and saw the time that left and was like, all right, we're almost to plot point one. It's 39 minutes in. What the fuck? There's a whole Dark Night of the Soul arc and everything in this movie coming up. Really? And it was.
I was trying to squeeze it into a very busy day. And so when I looked at the runtime, when I finally started, I was like, oh no, I better text these guys. I'm not going to be on time.
But anywho, so Steve, you know, you and Andy got some really extensive notes. Why don't you take the lead on this one and I'll hop in.
Well, so we start with the old lady party. Well, we get a sweeping shot of Champion City, and we see a big statue of Captain Amazing. Uh-huh. And so it kind of establishes very quickly the Burton-esque world that we live in and the superhero that's overlooking it. But then we go to a crazy old people party, and it's happening at a retirement home, but it's like there's these old ladies like doing this like crazy Egyptian dance in the middle, and then there's like a conga line of like women in wheelchairs going in a circle around them.
Yeah, man.
And Tom Waits is trying to hook up.
He's there for the ladies. Yeah. I'm just here for the ladies. I don't live here. And that long look between him and Ben Stiller. What? And it's left there.
There's a deleted scene with him on the couch with that old woman that he's talking to, and he's like, why don't we take this party back to your place? And she's like, but my roommate's home. And he's like, bonus. Just, if you can picture Tom Waits going, bonus.
Bonus. I love that. I can just picture you with like an old DVD, like the kind where you have to clip open the thing and then open it sideways. Yeah.
The clamshell
case. And you're just, is that what it's called?
I think so.
You're just popping it in the extra disc for the special feats on the Mystery Men disc.
You got to.
Because I've never seen the deleted scenes to this movie.
So we got the Blade Runner city and we're in the old folks home, but we get our first cameo of the movie when the Red Eye Gang invades, being led by none other than Artie Lang of Mad TV fame.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that.
He's the one who's like, hey ladies, like he's yeah. got that.
I want toupees and wigs.
Yeah.
Dude takes his teeth out and his eye, which nobody knew he had a fake eye, but he's came off of it immediately. What a coward.
Yeah. He's like, you take it. I don't want it.
And he's like, I'm keeping an eye on you.
Somebody takes an amputated arm that becomes like a visual gag for the rest of the scene.
Yeah, it sticks to the chandelier.
So in my terrible notes, I wrote the Red Eye Gang shows up to steal wigs. And then they are like, the Red Eye Gang loves stealing wigs. I was like, oh shit. Okay. So that's what they're called.
That's literally what's going on. It was actually a good note.
Did you write this movie?
Well, then I say,
are you Neil Cuthbert?
Fork, shovel, and angry suck at being superheroes. So apparently
that's almost their names.
Yeah, well, it was pretty close. Yeah, fork, shovel, and angry.
I'm the Blue Raja.
Blue Raja.
What is that? I'm sorry, UK listeners. There's a specific brand, if you will, of UK accent. Posh? Is it posh?
I that's what I thought it was. It might not be posh.
I love it. Mother. That's what we all think of when we think of, you know, either that or just like really, what's the other one? Cockneyed, I think is the name of like
it's
the
really
thick.
Cockneyed.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Those are our two like stereotypical English accents.
Yeah. And we got Ben Stiller being Mr. Furious.
He just immediately gets his ass kicked as soon as he hops in this fight.
Immediately. I don't even think he lands a punch.
He's like a super weak
whipped cream,
ineffectual Hulk. And I love the running gag that, and this is where the satire really kicks up. He keeps trying to come up with a corny superhero pun, but he's terrible at it. And that's almost the completion of his arc in this movie, is when he successfully makes a superhero pun.
Yeah. Janine Garofalo has a great line where it's like, your wit is often an hindrance.
Yeah.
But he's like, you want some whipped cream on that cherry top? And when Blue Raja came out, I kind of forgotten about him. And I was like, oh, is that okay to do? I don't know. Cause there's definitely some like colonialism shit going on with that character. Yeah.
Well, it's they
like,
call it
history. It makes sense.
Yeah. That line, and I'm not saying that makes it okay. I have no idea. And that's not for me to say, but right. I like at least that he's painted as an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause every time he tries to explain the origin of his name and why he actually doesn't wear blue in his costume, it always devolves to people like, it's whatever. They like, just cannot deal with it.
And he just gets ahead of it when his mom catches him. And if you knew your history, it makes sense. And it's so funny.
And then of course the shoveler is there as well.
He's just a shoveler who described by his wife, honey, you do shovel better than any man I've ever known.
But that doesn't make you a superhero. Mm-mm.
God gave me a gift.
I just love how
I wish we had watched this together. Yeah. Every time I say that, but it's true, but it would have been so much more fun. Because just me and the baby didn't get it. She didn't get the satire.
She's like, who's William H. Macy? Stupid baby.
Yeah, you don't even know William H. Macy yet.
You never seen Magnolia.
You don't know.
You didn't. If you did, you didn't understand the frogs. I do.
But after they get their ass handed to them for a few minutes, then we get the entrance of the actual superhero in Champion City. And that is Captain Amazing, played by the always great Greg Kinnear. Mm-hmm.
And he just beats ass right away. He makes short work of the dudes. And I love that it's very corny cuts of him beating ass, like a foot coming at the camera.
It's like boom, bang, pow. A dude
flying like 50 feet across the room and stuff. And I feel like that's the only time where they really like ham up the action that much, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's
other
true.
Than the
to
pinky
that
cam.
Extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the pinky cam and, you know, they do stuff like, POV of like the shovel coming at a face and then from the face, the shovel coming at it and stuff like that.
They do a lot of tight.
There's a lot of POV shots in this film.
That and a lot of tight close-ups. And I don't think it was fisheyed, but it's a weird lens, mm-hmm. And almost Dutched a little bit. They do it to Jeffrey Rush a lot.
Oh, they're Dutching angles so hard in this movie.
They and are. You can tell, you know, mm-hmm. first time director.
Yeah. Well, I know the cinematographer worked on, I think, The Shadow. And I think in the interviews, he said that he like really wanted to explore angles and color and to make it different from what The Shadow looked like.
It's definitely very visually interesting.
Yeah.
This movie.
Oh, I think
not
it's
a bad
great.
Way at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Not, it was never distracting. I think there was only one shot that I found distracting, but we'll get to that when we get to it. And it's not even like a bad distracting. It's just kind of like, oh, that's interesting. I don't know if I would have done that. Mm-hmm. But that's definitely an interesting choice. But then we get the, after he mops the floor with the red eyes, his, I assume publisher?
It's his publicist.
Yeah. Publicist played by Ricky Jay.
Yeah.
Which I always love seeing Ricky Jay and shit. I love that dude. And he comes up and he's trying to get him out. And, you know, the gang try to talk to Captain Amazing as peers. And mm-hmm. his Ricky Jay's like, no autographs, guys. No autographs. Like, oh, no, we're contemporaries.
Oh, I say, such a huge.
I'm the Blue Roger.
Such a huge fan. He's got a fork.
Master of Fox. And have a laugh.
You threw a spoon at him. Terribly sorry about that.
But yeah, so they're fangirling and it's like kind of the first indication of Mr. Furious's arc of feeling like he's a leader and feeling like he's downtrodden and stuff. He says, stop putting him on the pedestal. Put us on the pedestal. Mm-hmm. And he's mad. Whereas Captain Amazing, he tells him, you know, keep up the great work. And they're like, oh my God, did you hear? He said, keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work. Did you hear that? He was being earnest.
But yeah, and Mr. Furious thinks he's making fun of him. And then right before they depart, is it Dr. Heller? Is that Tom Waits' character's name?
Yeah.
Dr. Heller shows up and gives him his business card, says he's a weapons designer.
Janine is firepower.
Janine Garofalo later says, I think we should see his diploma. Don't you guys think? Yeah. And just kind of wave her off.
So we get a quick press conference with Captain Amazing where he's answering questions and they bring up the big plot point for him, which is, do you ever feel like you're doing such a good job that you're going to put yourself out of a job? And he laughs and says, ha, that'd be a good problem to have. And then very quickly gets into the car with his publicist.
Well, after the reporter asks, did you hear that? How do you feel about Pepsi taking away your sponsorship?
Oh, and, right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only thing of all the questions that the interview sent him that he kind of reacts to, like,
and he looks right at his publicist. Thing.
What?
And, yeah. Which just doesn't make any sense because he's already, we find out very soon, he's a billionaire already.
Yeah.
So at first I thought, oh, he's a very capitalist, which he is, but it's not like he needs the sponsorship money. It's just like an ego thing.
But you just answered your own question, Chris. He's a billionaire. The only thing billionaires care about is more money.
More money. Mm-hmm.
That's all they care about. Did you notice that the when the reporters are asking him questions, the guy in the center of the frame holding the camera, he's got a goddamn real camera. Like he's fucking cranking that shit. But all the other cameras in the background are like modern for the time news cameras. But then the guy front and center's got the crank reel.
It's probably just a visual gag.
Film production company just pulled that out of the warehouse. Like,
oh, this will be hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, it was as someone who does cameras like, what is that shit? That's fun.
But so then he gets in into his limo with his handler and basically complains that there aren't enough superheroes. And he talks about whatever happened to Dr. Death. Oh, well, he's dead. And what happened to this guy? Oh, he got life in prison. This guy got the chair. And he goes, oh, shit, he got the chair. Damn. But then he starts to talk wistfully about his previous escapades with Casanova Frankenstein. He's like, oh, man, the adventures we used to have.
That voice so evil.
And his handler says used to have is the point there. And you can see a little light bulb go off in his head.
There's a really fun joke where he says, I'm a publicist, not a magician. I'm like, Ricky Jay, you were always a magician. You're a famous magician, mm-hmm. which that's 100% a line they wrote just for this cameo. And then we never see him again for the rest of the movie. And I was kind of bummed because I love him.
We love Ricky Jay.
Love Ricky Jay.
Follow our other podcast available on Spotify, the Ricky Jay Cast.
Mm-hmm. We talk about all the films he cameos in.
That's not real. Don't look for it.
You can YouTube some of his magic shows that are pretty
but they're not affiliated with us.
No, but I mean, check them out. They're fine.
So then we cut to Casanova Frankenstein's parole hearing. And I just want to say real quick that it's a low hanging fruit that you guys could have called me Casanova at some point. Casson is literally my last name. And nobody ever in the history of my life was like Casanova.
Andy Casanova.
And never got that. So, you know, I think that says more about me than you.
You know, I just literally wanted to say, never occurred to me.
I just
never
wanted occurred. To say, damn, you know, that's a fancy football.
Do we
want
to try to force it?
Yeah, probably should.
Yeah. Andy Casanova over here.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Making his ribs on the weekend.
Baby.
So we
literally
we get the Casanova parole scene where the doctor says, oh, he's cured, his psychiatrist. And the other people, I guess they're, I don't know, who hangs out at a parole hearing?
Wardens, judges, I don't know.
Well, the wardens and the judges are like,
for some reason, the local billionaire has
a
seat on the council. So
yeah, he shows up. So Captain Amazing shows up and we find out his name is Lance. And he says, did I miss my chance for a vote? And they're like, oh, well, no. He says, well, I happen to have a letter here from Captain Amazing. He can tell you guys what he feels about it. And he pulls out a grocery list, what it's revealed to be, and says bread and eggs and stuff. But he says, Captain Amazing says that we in the name of true justice, everybody deserves a second chance, and that we should let Casanova Frankenstein out. And, you know, we believe that he's rehabilitated. And of course he's not. And we get that crazy when they say, Dr. Casanova, do you have anything to say for yourself? And
we will be as brothers. And just this, yeah, this is unhinged metaphorical
when
journey.
When I think of freedom, the ignominious Beethoven's Ode to Joy resounds in my skull. And yeah, it's psychotic.
Will I be as dancing?
It's insane.
Yeah, just completely... You know, that guy's not well, right?
Yeah. And everybody's like, stamp of approval. Captain Amazing said it's cool.
Yeah.
And that's where we find out that nobody knows Lance is Captain Amazing because he wears glasses as Lance. So mm-hmm. it's a Clark Kent joke, right?
Right. Yeah. I do love
this. He wouldn't be able to see.
Because Ben Stiller suspects that it's Lance. We find out in the diner.
I do love the nice touch of the giant blue stamp that just says cured.
Oh, yeah. That's how.
Is that how administration works?
In Champion City, yes.
Cured. Ka-chunk.
So then we cut to the mystery men getting lunch, and Roy, Mr. Furious, says that he thinks that Lance Hunt is Captain Amazing, and that's where we get that hysterical exchange with him and Mr. Shovel.
Lance Hunt wears glasses. He wouldn't be able to see if he took them off.
And then Ben Stiller's like, it's always these lingering long looks that really make the jokes land.
Yeah,
for me.
And that was the only note that I had for that scene. Did anything else really go on there?
Well, this is where, I mean, they do kind of have a fun back and forth. They're kind of critiquing their outing. We're like,
well, he bitches at him for throwing a spoon.
Yeah. And putting the fork in his ass and then he literally shoveled Ben Stiller's face. And there's still that.
It's my fault. You hit him with a shovel.
Yeah. And then we were introduced to Monica, waitress.
Couldn't you throw a knife? He's like, I'm the Blue Raja. I'm not Mr. Stabby.
I'm not Mr. Stabby.
But we're introduced to Monica, who is the love
Claire
interest.
Forlani.
Yeah.
I love Claire Forlani so much.
This movie's so 90s.
From, yeah, Mallrats fame. Yeah. That's why I know and love her. And I love seeing her in 90s stuff because I don't see her in anything else. But when she popped up on the screen, I was like, yes, love interest, because that's what she plays in everything.
Yeah, Ben Stiller kind of goes a little hard on her character. Like, oh, I don't know. We just got our butts kicked and he took the credit. And she's like, all right, man, damn.
He's Mr. Furious. That's his job.
Okay.
Mr. Chip on his shoulder.
And I do love the line. So they leave the diner and they're kind of complaining where like the Raja is like, I'm just saying the man who ordered the steak is taking money out of the pocket of the salad man.
Okay. Now the accent is nailed. You got this. That was perfect.
And then William H. Macy's like, well, you should order more. We always split
you
it.
You
got
to order more, Jeff. I love how they refer to each other as their normal names. And the way they do it sometimes is so perfect. Like,
yeah.
Especially when William H. Macy, like, I don't know, Jeff.
He's got the best fucking lines, and it's because it's William H. Macy. The stuff that he says is not funny except that he said it. Mm-hmm. Like there's one of his lines, what did he say? It was like we struck down evil with the mighty sword of teamwork and not bickering.
Yeah. Not bickering. But Ben Stiller,
the hammer of not bickering.
Oh, that's right. And the hammer of not bickering.
But Roy, Ben Stiller, Mr. Furious, he sees is it Tony P? Is that Eddie Izzard's character name?
I think something. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's like there's
Disco
Tony
Brothers
P, and then his right hand man is like
Johnny D. They're like have very similar
letters.
Names.
Yeah. And they come out,
but they're the disco pimping. Boys and they haven't been in town in forever. And he decides like, hey, let's go follow them and see what's up. But, the Shoveler and the Blue Raja are done.
Gotta
for the
get
night.
Home to the wife.
They don't want
to
do it. And he calls them. Oh yeah. Well, you're Lazy Boy. And the recliner. Yeah, Lazy
but
Boy.
But he comes with the recliner,
recliner
like way after they
already left.
Yeah. Wait, wait. Yeah. They're walking away. Wait, Lazy Boy and the recliner.
Right. That and that's awesome. Such a 90s joke because there was a flurry of maybe 5 years in the late 90s where all comedies referenced Lazy Boys for some reason. Like, yeah.
Brand awareness was so high for Lazy Boy chairs.
Oh, yeah. so he goes to follow them, but he kind of breaks his nuts on his own motorcycle because he's an idiot.
That was a dumb joke, but it worked.
But he was saying testicles rising, and I didn't get it that he was talking. That was like Fury Rising is his thing.
Oh.
But it happened so early on in the movie.
You're right. I still right. I was this years old when I
yeah
when I got the joke. Thank you, Andy.
You're welcome.
I
was like, why did he say that?
I assumed it was because his testicles literally went inside him.
But
Andy's yeah, that's 100% what it is.
He always narrates his his body. Body changing for his powers.
Puberty.
Pubes growing.
We got an Easter egg.
Oh, we did.
Yeah. When William H. Macy pulls home, he runs over a stuffed animal of Chomper from Land Before Time.
Is that what that was?
That's a little T-Rex Chomper from Land Before Time.
I didn't recognize it.
No, I didn't get it either.
I was too busy thinking, why would he try to pull it out without moving the car?
Right.
And then he rips the head off. I'm like, of course.
And you can see it's clearly already ripped.
Yeah, like, this is a bad idea, man.
But so then we get the Shoveler at home, and we're introduced to his wife, who is kind of fed up with his bullshit. And she says, your son needs that vest back. It's a catcher's vest that he's wearing from baseball. And he's like, well, it's my vest, too. I bought it for him.
Oh, I love that.
Like,
yeah.
Basically like, oh, don't you go there. And like basically saying, honey, you do a lot of things great. You're a wonderful husband, but you're not a superhero. And that's where we get this wonderful, God gave me a gift.
Yeah,
I shovel well. I shuffle very well. And then we get this adorable, like, I believe in you, daddy. Like, yeah. His boy's kind of like hugging his leg, and it's super cute.
And he's wearing a Captain Amazing t-shirt when he's doing it, which is awesome.
And she's like, don't encourage him.
Yeah.
And then we get Blue Raja at home with his mom. He's in there practicing his accent and his throws. And his mom pokes her head through the door and she says, Jeffrey, are you smoking weed?
Because he's got
all the incense going.
Yeah. And this is when he finally drops the accent for the first time. He's like, mom, you're breaking so many rules right now. You drive me crazy. And
how old do you think his character is supposed to be? Like, is he supposed to be like comically 30?
Gotta be 30s. Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
There were a couple moments in the movie where they kind of played off like he's younger than they are, but like I couldn't tell if that's what it was or if it was just kind of making the joke like, oh, he shouldn't be doing this because he's old.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think that Shoveler and Furious are supposed to be like late 30s and he's supposed to be like early 30s or something. So a little bit younger probably. Mm-hmm. But then also we get like a Janine Garofalo thing about wanting to go back to school. And I'm like, yo, you're not school age, but that's... You know, just kind of how acting works.
Well, it's grad school.
Yeah.
I guess so.
As two gentlemen who were in college,
we were not
college age. We should not throw these rocks in this glass house.
It's true.
People who live in glass houses shouldn't.
Yeah. What's that from?
This movie.
Yeah.
Let's
pop bacon. So
that's one of my favorite ones he does.
Oh, sorry. That's not actually in the movie. I'm sorry. That's from a deleted scene.
Damn your weird,
you know, deleted a lot scene of Mystery Men knowledge.
I rewatched them today because I knew there was a ton of them. So I rewatched them and they're like, honest to God, really fucking funny. But there's a reason why they're not in it because they kind of serve no purpose other than to be a funny little skit.
Yeah, they take from the mastery.
Like there's a whole scene with Luis Guzman that is not in the movie because it's just that one little skit and it's really funny. It's so good, but it serves no purpose.
Hit him with the goat.
No, it's right before, it's right before they go to see Keenan. Cause I think
Kel.
I'm sorry, Kel. Yeah, you're right. It's right before they go see him. Cause I think William H. Macy has him like, I know a guy we should talk to, before they go see him, it's Blue Raj who's like, I know a guy. He's a man who owns a taco stand. But in order to coax him out of his alter ego, you have to order the right combination of dishes. So they go there and he's like, can I help you guys? And they're like, we're looking for a very special order. And Luis Guzman like starts looking around and he like leans. He's like, what kind of combo are you looking for? And they like order like three numbers and then he just serves them food. And then they're like, maybe we should order the number 12 instead. And they end up like eating a ton of food. And they're like, this is pointless. He's just selling us way too much food. And then Ben Stiller goes, come on guys, let's pop bacon. And he gets up and leaves. And they're like, what does that mean? Does it mean we go?
Oh my God. That's hysterical. That should have stayed.
Steve loves the Snyder cut of Mystery Men.
For real.
Release the Snyder cut.
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. I'm so excited to be sponsored by BetterHelp because we here on Streaming Things have been big advocates of mental health and therapy for a long time, but we haven't known how to incorporate it into the show because it's something you have to be really responsible about. I'm actually in the mental health field and have been looking for a therapist for quite some time, but have been unable to find one. Every time I find a therapist that I connect with, they're either not accepting new patients or they're scheduling so far out and my willingness to treat my mental health is so low that I just let it go by and don't think about it again for a while, because that's how my life is structured sometimes. I try to solve my own problems with my own mind, but when your mind is the problem, that's hard to do. So I'm so excited to be working with BetterHelp. BetterHelp is awesome. If you're thinking about giving therapy a try, it works perfectly. It's convenient. It's accessible. It's all online. It's very affordable. And they help pair you with a therapist that can suit your needs after filling out a brief survey. And you can switch therapists at any time. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/streamingthings.
So then we get we follow where Mr. Furious went. He followed the Disco Men back to Casanova Frankenstein's house, and we see Casanova meeting with the Disco Man as well as his psychiatrist, who had said at his parole hearing that he was cured. Now we know that she was in his pocket.
She's the main squeeze,
and very quickly he blows up Champion City Asylum.
It's his first order of biz.
I'm not sure why. Is that a deleted scene that maybe explains why? Or is it just something that...
Who knows why madmen do what they do, Andy?
Yeah.
It was the asylum he was just at. He probably didn't have great feelings about it. And he's an evil man.
I mean, he could take the Beethoven symphony with him. That doesn't belong in the asylum. Yeah.
You know, I actually just put it together why he did it because of what happens next. Right after that, Captain Amazing shows up. And so he was trying to lure him out. And he says, the first thing you do is you blow up an asylum. You're going to jail for life this time. And they have this... a funny little back and forth where he's like, well, go ahead and take off the laser gun that's on your finger armor and disarm the poison darts that are in your boots. And I can't remember what
his drink star stick had some ability.
Yeah. But they kind of have a fun back and forth about like, oh, how well we know each other. And Captain Amazing finds what he thinks is the detonator of the bomb that blew up.
But it's not.
It's a possible enticement snare.
It's aerated chloroform.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So he gets chloroformed and he has this funny like, that stinks. And oh, damn.
I love his acting because, yeah, he does like a ugh like that, like when he starts smelling it and then when he falls down, he goes, ah, dang.
And so I don't have the note here. Did Furious leave when he saw Captain Amazing?
All he saw was Captain Amazing go in.
And he's just like, oh, okay, of course.
Yeah, he's got it handled. Up. Yep.
Because from there, we cut to Mr. Furious at the junkyard. And we find out a big source of his rage is that he has a terrible job and his boss sucks. And she keeps telling him to.
Yeah, she's like the mom from the Goonies. / don't throw
it
mama
might
from
be
the, train.
The mom from the Goonies.
Yeah,
I don't think it is.
I know. I think here I'm gonna figure out who that woman is.
But it's very similar.
I know she's like a important.
But
actress.
This is the scene that I was thinking of where I laughed earlier inappropriately while Steve was talking, where he grabs the stress ball and he's like, "Ooh, this little thing just saved your life," and she's like, "Shut up."
Junk it.
I can't junk it. And that's where we find out a little Chekhov's tank.
Chekhov's tank. Yeah, exactly right.
It's a vehicle so strong that he can't junk it without the proper tools. And she just junk it.
But dude, the stress ball thing had me so I wish I could have been a fly on the wall when they were filming that. Just like the close up.
Yeah, you know that took like 13 takes for them to not laugh.
Right, yeah. Not just him, but like the cameraman too.
No,
like
everybody.
That would drive me insane.
I would have needed a stress ball to not laugh.
Steve, what, is that the lady from The Goonies?
It's not, but it's an actress named Margaret Wheeler. This is her last film because she was 92.
Wow. Holy
shit. Yeah. But she's well known for being in the Twilight Zone movie, The Golden Girls, Highway to Heaven. Yeah.
Now she's on the Highway to Heaven.
She's in a ton of movies around that time frame, but I think she's just another one of the many character actors that just kind of cameo in this film.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The whole dang team. So where do we go after we leave Mr. Furious?
So from there we get Captain Amazing and Casanova, and we get like our Bond villain moment where he kind of tells him what his big plan is going to be, and basically says that he's going to kill him. To which Captain Amazing says, like, that sounds like really a really bad plan.
Yeah.
Here, how about we do this instead? Hey, it's not the best plan, but you know what? That's why I like it, which was fun. My notes get a little weak here, Steve.
I'll be your sidekick. Amazing boy is, I know, the line that it cuts on.
Oh, yeah. The amazing boy. Yeah. But this is when the trio are trying to sneak into the mansion to try to break him out. There's a real fun bit where they hear a sound like, it sounds like heat seeking rocket. No, it's a poison gas. Hold your breath. But it's just the sprinklers.
And the other guy says, run. And they're like, don't run. Don't move. Hold your breath.
Don't run. Don't move. Yeah. And then the sprinklers go. I'm like, ah.
They get confronted by the disco boys and their whole gang. And they start making fun of their outfits, which doesn't match their names at all. And I find that really endearing because they've put a lot of effort into their own. Even though their costumes don't make sense either.
Yo, guy with a chain, at least make it a gold chain. I mean, come on, what are you going for?
Well, here? The guy pulls out a gun and points it at him. I think it's Blue Raja that's like, a gun? That's your power?
Oh, how very clever.
What does that have to do with disco?
That was awesome.
The wide shot of them getting like beat down is like the best, worst beat
it's
down
terrible.
Ever.
The dude's, because they're, it's like the Irishman.
None of them are even close to connecting these like punches and kicks. It's so funny. And I hope that was intentional, because if it wasn't, it was really bad.
The dude with the pipe. Yeah. Shovel calls him. He says, what are you, the disco plumber? Mm-hmm. But yeah, the one with the pipe especially is like barely moving.
Don't hit Ben Stiller.
Yeah. Well, even the main guy with the afro, he's doing kicks, but his kicks are
the worst.
2 feet to the left of anybody.
And they're very half-hearted.
Yeah.
They're like, but then we cut to the diner again. They always hang out in the diner. So apparently they just beat the shit out of them and let them go. Like they just weren't threatened by them at all.
Yeah. And this is where Mr. Furious and they're all kind of like, we need to start recruiting. I bet there's a ton of guys out there willing to get in on this hot action. And Blue Roger's like, a ton of poses, which is so funny. Like, coming from you.
This isn't where we meet Spleen, is it?
No, not yet. This is when they bring up the Sphinx.
He asks, he's very mysterious. He asks out Monica.
What's his power? Well, he is very mysterious.
He's very terribly mysterious.
No, I heard that he can cut guns in half with his mind. Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, this Blue Raja is like, takes a step back. Like, I'm not putting my name on that. Right.
And then that's where Mr. Furious tries to spit game with.
I like his plan was solid. He walks up, donates to the children with cancer in front of her, of course, drops a quarter in that box.
It's good cause there.
Good cause there. Hey, I'm sorry.
Homeless animals.
Yeah, that's right. And he's like, I'm sorry for terrifying you the other day. It can be very scary at times. And she's like, nah, I wasn't scared at all.
I want to make it up to you by taking you out to dinner.
And then she's looking at a magazine half-heartedly with motorcycles in it. And he's, what are you, a hog queen? And she's like, she's like, what? You're in a motorcycle. So she's like, not really. And he's like, oh, it's because I ride one. And she's like, what kind?
Harley-esque.
No, he says Harley applicable, like Harley parts work on it.
Harley capable?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not a Harley. But anyway, it fails miserably. She's not interested in going on a date with him. Mm-hmm. So he puts the bloody tissue back in his nose the wrong way round.
That he accidentally spit into the homeless dog. The homeless dog donation.
Yeah.
Smooth move, my guy. But he strikes out. But luckily for him, the shoveler knows a guy. And that's where we meet the invisible boy. They go to his house and knock on the door. I really love this line because they're like, are you the invisible boy? And Kel's like, I knew this one day this would come. People never looked at me. But I will finally be seen. Like, yeah, are you going to invite us in? And when he lets him in, there's just like this one shot of like his dad in the living room. Like, hey dad, I'm going up to my room with three strange men.
Yeah. And the dad doesn't say anything.
Does not react.
He's a total Ted.
Cause he's invisible. He's the invisible boy.
Oh, that's right. I get it now.
But it's a funny line. But pretty much he says his power of invisibility can only come when no one is looking at him.
Even when himself. He's looking. Exactly.
And they're right. Like, how could you be sure that you are actually dematerializing? And she's like, when you turn invisible, you can feel it. But really, it seems like what his true power and what he can really bring to this team is that he's really good at networking.
Mm-hmm. He says that he's been he goes to all kinds of martial arts training places and like weapons
costume
stores,
shops.
Costume shops and stuff.
So like, first they go to the diner, and this is where Spleen comes in.
Yes.
Which is Paul Rubens, who plays a disgusting man.
That dude grossed me out when I was a kid. I didn't want to watch this movie because of him.
I get it.
Like the greasy hair and the zits and stuff. And Pee Wee Herman always just weirded me out.
Yes. The general Paul Rubenness of it all.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're like, did you come out of a theater, sir? I know what you did in there.
Yes.
Yeah. And you didn't wash your hands.
I think this was one of the first movies he did after that whole debacle because no one wanted to hire him after that came out.
Oh, was that a real thing that he did?
Jerk off in a movie theater?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what like a, what do you mean? Like an AMC?
No, or like it was a porn theater. It was a porn theater.
Well, I mean that's like
what you go there for.
Oh, right. He's eating tacos at a Taco Bell? What an asshole.
Right. Yeah, no. But it was one of those things where it's the 90s, right? And people are like, oh, my gosh.
It's
touched your penis.
Sure.
But a lot
you're
of-
you're on a children's show.
And that was also part of it.
That's
like
true.
Pee Wee Herman touched his dick.
Yeah, you catch like Blue's Clues in there.
Well, didn't that dude also do like cocaine?
And I'm just the knocking Steve? Home runs all around.
Know,
his name was Steve. Yeah. I said Blue's Clues. Like the dog was in the theater.
They brought him back for little things for Blue's Clues, which has been kind of sweet.
Oh, maybe
the original Steve is on TikTok. He seems like a nice guy, but I'm not aware of any controversy. I stay away from all that stuff. So I'm sorry. I didn't know anything about.
It's kind of stupid, but like this was I think this was one of the first movies that was like, okay, we can bring in Paul Rubens, like the director.
Especially for this character.
Kinka Usher, really like went hard. Like, no, we want Paul Rubens. And the studio was like, buddy, jerked off in a theater. And they're like, haven't we all?
Yeah. Right.
But I'm so glad that he got him back because Paul Rubens is so good.
He's good for this character. He's perfect.
Yeah. This is like the role he was born for other than Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah. So the backstory of Spleen is that he farted outside on the street. And then there was like an old magic-y looking lady walking by and he blamed the fart on her. And she was so upset that she cursed him for life.
That since he smelt it, he would forevermore be he who dealt it.
Yeah.
And that's where we get the display of his powers.
SPD.
Everybody there is like trying to hide. Like they don't want to.
He gives them all clothesline clamper thingies.
What are those? Clothespins?
Clothespins.
Oh, C-47s.
Yeah. Clothesline clamper thingies.
That's what that was. I swear to God, I thought he was he was unpinching them from his asshole.
Like he's got to keep it shut. Exactly. It's too dangerous.
Yeah.
He had four of them on his gigantic asshole was how you read that scene.
That's how I read that scene. This is
no, it was like an old cartoony.
I love the way your mind works, Andy. Truly wonderful. The mind of a Casanova is.
He reached into his pants and pulled out the thing.
And he subtly threw the Casanova nickname at you.
I loved it. And I wasn't going to point it out because I didn't want it to be
you wanted
forced.
To catch on.
Yeah. Yeah. We get the SBD performance.
SBD.
Yeah. And he's ironically one of only two people in the giant crew that we end up getting that has an actual superpower, and it's his ass. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. One of the diner worker that is knocked out by his flatulence, that is Kinka Usher.
Oh, really?
That is the director.
Oh, cool.
And then William H. Macy, I fucking love his line delivery here because he shoots them all with his ass and then it cuts to William H. Macy going, that's good shooting.
An invisible voice is super impressed all around.
Oh, he loves it. He loves it. But now they're like, okay, well, I guess Spleen, we haven't quite settled on you being the team. Same with you, Invisible Boy, but we should host tryouts somewhere where we could have like a pool party because everyone will come out for a barbecue and a pool party. Who has a pool?
Got to be Shoveler's house.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Not no way. No way. Smash cut to a bunch of crazy people in a pool.
And the wife leaving like, and she's like,
I don't deserve this.
I could have married somebody better than you. I still can. Yep. I might divorce you. And he's like, that's fair.
That's fair. Understandable.
We get all these like people in costume diving into the pool and stuff. I bet that scene was a lot of fun to film.
And the worst superhero. We get Dane Cook cameo.
Yeah, we get
that a was one. A relic of the 90s.
We get
the Waffler.
That was a relic before Dane Cook was popular. That was before Dane Cook reached his popularity in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
This was very young Dane Cook.
The Waffler, baby.
Either hit him with it or I burn him like this.
And they're like, ugh.
It's like I've been working on
Waffler.
Golden like Crispy. Back on history. Waffle Man.
And I'm running. Apparently, when Dane Cook showed up for the tryout, he only. Like when he auditioned for the role of the Waffler, and he like put the gridiron, like he showed up to the audition with the shirt that had the iron marks on it.
I love that idea.
But apparently when he showed up, Ben Stiller was like, what are you doing? Your character just waffles on things. Like they don't like that was the intended character trait was that he just waffled on like decisions.
Should we do it or should we?
Was indecisive. But and Dane Cook came up with the gridiron waffle, which is way better.
Yeah.
It's so much better. But I love the idea that Dane Cook is like either didn't know that's what they meant or was like, fuck it, I'm doing the waffle. Thing.
Full waffle. Pencilhead and his son. Son of Pencilhead or something.
Son of Pencilhead. Even though their shirt has the initials PM for Pencil Man.
Yeah. And they erase crime.
Do you guys want to know the names of all of the characters that were there, even the ones whose scenes were cut?
Yes,
please. All right. This is according to IMDb. We have the two Power Women, both named Power Women.
They beat dressed the like shit Wonder out Woman. Of each other.
Yeah. There is Super Vac Man, the Reverse Psychologist, Mr. Pups, the Waffler, Ballerina Man, the Mailman, Pencilhead and Son of Pencilhead, Little Miss Vengeance, Squeegee Man, do you sense its power?
Yeah, and he's just rubbing, hitting her nose with it.
The Maintainer, the Artiste, Big Billy Hillbilly. That's hard to say. PMS Avenger. She only works
4 days of the month. You got a problem with that?
No, not at all. No. Radio Man, Two Pigs, The Martial Artist, Gorilla, Evil Devil Woman, Global Man, The Gardener, Bullfighter, Stilt Man, Fisherman, and Thirsty Man.
Sounds like a bunch of alt rock albums from the 90s. It does.
We're just waiting for the Butthole Surfers to arrive and we'll be set.
Sounds like you're going through my CD collection. Yeah, great scene. Great scene. And at the very end of that, Janine Garofalo shows up as the bowler and says, "A tryout's done. They're exhausted. They went through a bunch of duds." And they're like, "Yeah, tryouts are over." And she
go pretend to be a superhero somewhere else.
Yeah, she gets offended, throws her bowling ball in a fantabulous display of athletic, I don't know, prowess.
I would say magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because the ball is possessed by the soul.
Yeah, we find out later she's not doing anything. She's just unleashing her father. But yeah. It looks really cool.
Carmine
at the
Boulder.
So then they're all, everybody but Mr. Furious is instantly super impressed, but he still tries to play it cool. Like, we got a lot of good applicants, but the shoveler's not having one. He's like, who? He's like, he just wants to be done with it, clean up his house. This is the only one. This is all we got.
Mm. And clearly, she's got a magical ball.
This is where Mr. Furious kind of starts getting pushed out of the crew, or at least them letting him pretend to be the leader starts to stop. And he gets pretty upset about it over the course of the next 45 minutes or so, dare I say.
Mm-hmm. And we get the start of the ongoing bit of the, you tell me, you tell me,
no, you tell me,
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 you tell me.
Oh, the funniest line from this scene is where she talks about her dad, Carmine Bowler. And they're like, oh, didn't he die? Seems like there was a little controversy there regarding your father's death. And then she goes, yeah, the police said he fell down an elevator shaft. Onto some bullets.
I always suspected a bit of foul play.
As have I.
Yeah.
I always suspected a bit of foul play there.
I love Hank and Zary. But eventually,
so the gang goes, they let her become part of the team. And the gang runs, they chase down Carmine, Carmine Falcone.
Yeah,
they chase down
straight Batman.
Casanova, Frankenstein's car, and they get out and they vandalize it. And so
this is my favorite scene in the movie, probably.
It's a big deal to them. And like they do this amazing superhero jump thing to get Mr. Furious up on the roof.
It's actually
of the car.
What's so funny about this scene is they're like halfway competent. But then all they manage to do,
they're so petty.
The best of their best is just to break their car a little bit.
And he's like trying to rip off like the front logo thing of the car and can't do it. It's like banging on it.
That's his power. He's like, and he starts like ineffectually pounding on the top of the car.
You're about to open a Pantera's box.
Yeah. It's Pandora's box. Don't correct me. It sickens me.
It sickens me.
Yeah, and then he's like stomping, the roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. We don't need the water.
And Blue Raja throws his forks in and locks the doors on him after Spleen farts in there. And the best part about that is he and Bowler, you know, Jeanine Garofalo and Blue Raja look at each other when he locks the doors with the forks. They're both shocked that he did it.
Yeah.
And he's like, ooh, that was fucking awesome. Nailed that, you know.
I love that quick cutaway he does where he takes his fork and he's just scratching the side of a car that has already been busted by Shoveler.
With just a tiny fork.
It's just a good show of like, separately, these guys are fucking useless. Like they're so useless on their own, but you put them together, they're still kind of useless, but you can see that there's like something forming where some good stuff can happen.
The thunder of teamwork and the hammer of not bickering.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a powerful force.
Anything is possible.
So they run away. They get shot at and stuff, but they do manage to get away and they go hit the bar after.
Stunning victory.
And so they're just having drinks and celebrating and stuff. And we get a little humor with Spleen trying to mack on Carmine's daughter, the bowler. Do we ever find out her real name?
I'm sure we did, but I didn't.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't take note of it.
Normie.
My notes just call her Jeanine, like the whole, like, yes, Jeanine Garofalo.
And that's where we get the crazy bit of her arguing with her dad's dead head.
She starts that in the car.
Oh, it does it?
Scene is them in the car.
Yeah.
Where she says,
Blue Raja is telling her his backstory. And then she's like, what's that, dad? No, he's not a commie or a fruit.
Yeah. 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 They're all we hired a crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So according to IMDb, she is just listed as the bowler.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means anything because they just call Ben Stiller Furious.
He's Roy.
Shoveler.
Yeah.
Area Blue Raja. So I don't know.
Well, so they're celebrating their wonderful victory. And then when they go to leave, the disco guys were outside waiting for them. And like it should have been obvious. Right. But
right.
So they're there and they back.
They're all wasted and they all have guns pointed at them. Yeah.
They line them up and they're about to get shot. And then right before they pull the trigger, before Eddie Izzard pulls the trigger, all of the guns get cut in half, which was the introduction of the Sphinx, which was amazing.
Played by another character actor, Wes Studi.
Yeah.
He's literally in fucking everything. Like that guy shows up in every show and TV. Like you've seen him in everything. He's everywhere, but he's always these minor side character roles.
Yeah. He's like the Samuel L. Jackson that never quite reached the next level.
I would love to hear Wes Studi Hill. Like there's too much snakes on these motherfucking planes. Mm. Like I would live for that.
So they bring in the Sphinx and we get a training montage where it's basically like, I can show you the way. And we get the funny stuff of like, the Spleen, like walking on the fire and like farting and the fire shoots up behind him and stuff. This is where the Blue Raja learns to throw the forks from underneath his sleeve and he has all of these like witty, nonsensical idioms.
Formulaic idiom. Anyone else find these little formulaic? Because they're all like, you must be the wolf pack, not the six pack. You must believe in your power, or you must never doubt your power, because if you don't, you only give power to your doubts. It's like always that.
Yeah, like switched around.
Yeah.
And well, at one point, isn't Mr. Furious wearing watermelons for shoes?
Yeah, he's like, yeah. Why did I put the watermelons on my shoes? I don't remember telling you to do that.
So during,
I do love that joke. It's so dumb and out of left field, but I just love, like, I don't remember telling you to do that.
So during the part where the Sphinx is telling them to make new costumes, Fury, you know, basically says he's sick of it, that, you know, these things are pretty formulaic. You know what? I'm out of here. And then nobody wants to go with him. And then he says, fine, I guess I'm a wolf pack of one, which the Hangover later stole.
Yes, they did.
That line came from here.
Mm.
So the after he bails, the Sphinx says, you know what you need? If you can't have manpower, then you need firepower. And so that's where they decide we need to hit up Tom Waits.
Yeah.
His name I can't remember.
Dr. Heller.
Mm-hmm. So they head to an abandoned amusement park because he is an eccentric genius. And that's mm-hmm. where eccentric geniuses hang out.
And Harley Quinn.
While that's going down, we get Furious going to Mac and Claire Forlani again.
Back
and
to the diner with Monica, but now he's sad boy. She's mm-hmm. like, where are your friends at? And he's like, what friends?
And she now that he's, you know, taken him down a peg, she agrees to let him.
She actually likes him.
Yeah, a little bit.
When he drops the act, just be Roy.
And so they test out all these fun guns with Tom Waits and
were most ridiculous weapons.
Can tornado.
The can tornado is fine, but what's the one, the
shrink ray, the
make their clothes so tight they won't be able to move.
It's based off everyday laundromat technology.
But there's one that
the
makes
blame Jeannie thrower.
The blame thrower. Yeah. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Quit spitting on me.
And then I love it when they like turn the blame thrower off. They're like, I'm sorry. Yeah,
both so he kind. Goes to kiss and yeah. she's like,
No, absolutely not. Sorry. Sorry, guys.
So
I'm spilling.
This is where the waitress tells Furious that he should go back and apologize.
Oh, that's a high temperature fabric adhesive liquid projector based on a simple dry cleaning technology.
Great line.
You aim that at a guy and I'm telling you something. His clothes get so tight he can't even breathe.
Fucking brilliant. And I just love that it's fucking Tom Waits.
I was so confused the whole time. I'll never get used to it.
So the mystery men, now that they have the firepower from Tom Waits, they decide to go on Operation Three-Eyed Three-Legged Eagle.
Craw!
Craw! Craw!
And so this is where we get the wonderful scene where Mr. Furious shows up and he wants back into the gang, but he doesn't know how to say sorry. And so he says,
on the advice of Monica.
Yeah. Yeah. And he says, have you seen my address book? And we get the probably my favorite scene of the whole movie. What does it look? It says hang loose and has a picture of a kitten.
It's denim.
Yeah. No, you should probably think of the last place you saw it. You know what? Can I just tell you, it makes me so angry you guys are together and you're going out without me. And I just pulse rising, lungs constricting.
Roy, why don't you come with us?
Pulse slowing down.
Good call, man.
Good call on that one. We got a blind date with Destiny and it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
So that we go
are
to.
Are you just pulling off quotes from IMDb from this movie?
No, it's moviequotes.com.
Are you peppering? This movie poop just randomly peppering in quotes from the movie?
Yeah, I didn't write them down like I normally would. So I wanted to contribute.
Oh, okay. So then we cut to Casanova's house where we get to see the villain party that's going down and we're introduced mm-hmm. to all kinds of people. We see Big Tobacco is there. The frat boys. What do they say?
We bring back the brewskis?
Fatal hazing or something.
Lethal hazing. You know who leads the frat boys? Michael fucking Bay.
Oh shit. Are you serious? The lead
one is like, hey man, can we bring the brewskis?
That's Michael Bay. That's insane.
Yeah.
Isn't that bananas?
I didn't recognize him at all.
Like as soon as he appeared on screen, I'm like, who the fuck is that? I know who that is.
It's like the year after he directed Bad Boys, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a huge star at this point.
Yeah, he's a known director, way more known than Kinka Usher.
Yeah, well, he's already done The Rock and all that stuff by now.
Yeah,
Armageddon. Been like on the
I think lot. Armageddon is a couple years after.
It's got to be 90s though, right?
I thought Armageddon was like 98.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I always saw that.
Like either way, this is the height of the Bayhem.
This is Bayhem. And he took time out of the Bayhem to be the leader of the frat boys.
Yeah, 98, Armageddon.
98, damn.
Yeah, holy shit. Crazy. So my notes get a little silly here because now I have that Roy gets kissed, but he just jumped in the car with the gang. So what did I miss there?
This is when the show is like,
up
if you
lot.
Have family, because eventually, so they all meet up. They're kind of going over the plan and what they're going to do. And he's like, hey, and Shoveler's like, if you have family, now's the time to go say goodbye to him. So he shows back up to Monica's house and tells her like, hey, if I'd love to take you out again, but if I don't call, it's because I'm dead.
Yeah. She asks what his name is. He's like, Phoenix.
Dirk.
Phoenix Dirk.
She's all right. Never mind. She starts to leave. He's like, it's Roy.
Yeah.
She gives him a kiss.
It changes to Dirk.
Yeah. And then she kisses him. And that seems to like stamp out the flame of his fury for the time being.
And we've already talked about all the scenes in this section. This is when Blue Raja goes back home and, you know, his mom gives him his great grandmother's silverware to throw and, accepts him for who he is. This is when William H. Macy's Shoveler tells his wife, hey, I understand if you're not here when I get back, but there'll be no world to come back to if I don't do this.
I think there's a really fun scene right before they leave where they're all kind of standing in the junkyard. There's a fire barrel behind them. And there's a joke where like the spleen standing in front of the fire barrel and it just kind of erupts in flame.
It's out of nowhere.
And he's like, sorry. You know why it's out of nowhere?
Because there was a deleted scene.
It wasn't supposed to happen. Apparently a member of the crew just threw their lighter in there just to dispose of it and didn't realize it was still full of liquid. And it just so happened to explode behind Paul Reubens, the flatulence
while
guy.
While they were filming?
Wow. While they were filming. So it was a complete act. So they're like jumping, looking back at it is completely unprompted because they didn't know it was supposed to blow up like that. And so they were like, that's fucking perfect. And so they filmed that one reaction shot of
Paul Reumann and Hank Azaria reacting to it, going like, excuse me. And he's like, ugh. Like, so they did that on the fly.
That's great.
That was just a happy accident.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Right.
What a good cover, Paul Reumann.
Yeah, I know, right?
Just to go with it instead of being terrified.
So the team, at some point they found out about, Tom Waits found out about the awesome tank that's at the junkyard. That
It's the Kargalugunas 5000.
Yeah.
So what was it?
Kargalugunas 5000.
Got nailed it.
And so they decide to break in on the villain party where Casanova has brought all of these villains, and he's going to tell them about the wonderful plan that he has for Champion City. And they're all wondering, like, well, what are you going to do about Captain Amazing? Well, this is where they break in, right? Am I?
Oh, I think we got a little mixed up because they go in to break in. And then this is when they accidentally kill Captain Amazing, and then they go back after that.
Okay, yeah, we got ahead of it. Okay, so anyway, they did try to break into Casanova's house. They find Captain Amazing there, who is telling them to flip these.
It's his fault.
These switches on the wall. What does he call them though?
Toggles. He's strapped to the psychofraculator.
Right. So they're like, how many times do you want to flip it? And he's like, well, seven. I already told you the second time, and they're like, we just want to make it clear that the number of flips that needs, and not including the one you may or may not have told us to do in a state of panic. And
it's totally his fault.
Yeah,
I don't know why he's turning the machine on at all. And he's giving them poor instructions.
Well, he's good. Just got a lot of ego.
And hubris, he's a terrible person because he's the reason all of this is happening. Because I don't think we've ever blatantly touched on the fact that we did, but
he sucks.
He wanted to release Casanova Frankenstein to have somebody to fight. So all of this is his doing.
Yes.
And I never understood Casanova Frankenstein's plan, but it doesn't matter in the remotest to me. Yeah. He's going to melt the entire city and like,
well, I think he's going to destroy Champion City and then as a demonstration of his weapon, and then he will then control the world because he could do it from there.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be his new world order, because people, it's like having a Death Star. Like, they'll do whatever I want because fear will keep them in line. It's one of those things.
Gotcha. Death Star 101.
Right. Yeah.
Baby.
Yep.
So they inadvertently kill Captain Amazing trying to flip the switches. That's when we get
Sheldon's like, I was over here. Yeah.
No, that was awesome. Just completely deadpan. Yeah. Like, what do you mean me? I was standing right here.
He's still holding his shovel too.
He was holding like these like two circular things to like,
yeah, putting to the, see, like, see what he looks like with glasses.
Yeah. But yeah, so good.
So yeah, then after that, when during our kind of Dark Night of the Soul moment, that's when we get the egg salad. This is egg salad. It's so high in cholesterol. My wife won't even let me touch it. Now, are we going to do this, or should I eat this sandwich? Which was fucking amazing.
Zagazunt. That was the second little call thing.
There's so much like random, like foreign languages going on. At some point we get, Tom Waits says, go with God in Spanish.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay. Like,
yeah.
Gott im Himmel. But he's German. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Zagesund means be healthy. So I think it's Yiddish, I think.
So that's when we get, they take the truck and they break into the party, where they are now that
the big action sequence, they got trained up. They got their
big vehicle.
Well, now that Captain Amazing is dead, they decide at midnight, they're going to set off the bomb and destroy everybody in Champion City. And yes, that's when we get the wonderful action sequence. And this is after they break in, they use their big magnet to bring in all the guns, disarm everybody.
And they're still trying to shoot them from the magnets.
They all run behind the wall that has like the laser eye. And this is when Invisible finally gets his big moment.
This is it. This is my time to shine. Nobody look at me.
Everybody look away.
And the show was like, good luck, son.
But it works. He actually can turn invisible, and he goes and he flips the little on off switch that's on the wall next to the giant death ray eye. And then he turns around and we get the wonderful, I did it. I'm invisible. Can you see me? From the trailers. And that's where we get, yes. And he goes, two hands, son.
Which, maybe so we put get, on get some clothes if you want to get going on in here.
Maybe put on some clothes if you want to keep fighting crime.
Yeah, there's a really, I love the blocking of when they fall back into the disco room. Because when Jeffrey Rush points, he does like the disco pose. Like, yeah. Everyone to the disco room.
And then we get a moment. Everybody gets a moment in this fight. We have the shoveler fighting a bunch of the disco guys. And at one point, it seems like another guy's the upper hand. And he pulls out a little spade and blocks the and it keeps going, which is amazing.
A tiny shovel.
They use the shrink ray on the Furies. Is that what they're called? The women?
Yeah, I think so.
I can't remember the names of all the
gangs,
gangs. We had the rhyming guys. We had the suit not so goody mod downsizing everybody.
The suit mob. Their scene was cut from the movie when they get dispatched. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, that's a good point.
You can look it up, though. It exists online.
All the deleted scenes, Steve's recommends.
Yep. But so Casanova is kind of backed into a corner, but then he reveals that he has Claire Forlani. And
why?
I don't know. Somehow.
Well, the disco boys spied on him going back to her apartment.
Oh, they kidnapped her.
They kidnapped her because they knew that she was close to him.
But he's threatening her his sharp pinky nail. It's
a very sharp pinky nail. And he even dabs a little bit of blood. And they all back up, drop their weapons, and then Ben Stiller just starts scrambling at the wall like a dog. But Blue Raj has got him.
He's doing his little sneaky fork rock wall.
And then he like puts his hands back up after he does like 37 forks. I wasn't doing that. I was too sneaky.
Yeah, I love him so much.
And Ben Stiller hops up there and says, they must rip the Q section out of the dictionary because I just don't know when to quit.
Yeah. We've all heard that before.
He gets his ass beat, which was... had to happen. And this is when we get the wonderful pinky cam where he's going.
Yeah. So good.
It's amazing. What was the turning point? What made Roy suddenly like really, truly get angry? He was like, no, rage really actually coming.
Oh, you know what? What was that? Did I write that held hostage?
I don't remember.
We're going so fast. I don't know. I didn't write that down.
I don't recall either. I just remember he started kicking his ass.
Oh yeah. He like grabs his pinky and does him like a little flip. He like with a little hip.
Reminds me of Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh yeah.
The Pinky Warriors. Right. That's what that scene reminded me of a lot.
We did skip over that the bowler finally gets her vengeance on Tony P.
Oh, a huge moment.
Oh shit.
That was the guy who killed her father. He told her that in the car. That's when they vandalized the limo. But
So she gets her vengeance on him.
One hit squishes him all the way into the brick wall. And then that's when she says, now I can go back to grad school. That was the deal.
That was the deal. Yeah. I just love how. Oh, and then we also skipped at one point, Paul Rubens and the Invisible Boy are like behind a chair and he gets shot in the ass. And
I can't feel my ass.
I can't feel my ass. What? I can't feel my ass. I'm scared of the Susies.
Weapons check.
Yeah. Weapons check. And he blasts them. The kingdom come. And then he just gets down and goes, it'll do. And then passes
out. Oh, I think it's just Frankenstein taunts him after beating his ass. And then he stands up and he had been knocked down.
He's not going to take that from his lady.
Stands up and he starts getting mad.
He went full Chumbawamba.
And then when he goes to attack with the pinky, he catches it with his pinky. And there's like this pinky swear moment, which was amazing. but yeah, so he, while this is happening, the midnight has struck and the bomb is about to go off and he fights Frankenstein, grabs him and then throws him over the railing.
Psychofraculator. Throws him into the ray of the psychofraculator and he melts as he falls down. Mm-hmm. But then they got to discombobulate the psychofraculator. God damn it. I tried.
And how do they do that? Group hug,
which I didn't understand at all.
This makes Sphinx's day. Well, because earlier in the training montage, when Ben Stiller leaves.
I get the
leaves,
character arc for Furious, but I don't understand practically why that's what they do. But I mean, wrong movie for that.
I just love it when they say group hug. You see the Sphinx like, yeah! He's so into it. And then, they kind of make a little huddle protecting Janine Garofalo. And so she can get close enough to the portal or the psychofraculator beam. And she can release her father, Bowling Ball,
Her
father bowling ball, who will wreck shit and destroy it for them because he's already dead. Good news. He cannot die, for he is already dead. Yeah. He is Ironborn. in the deleted scene of this.
Of course.
Actually, it's not a deleted scene. They just redid it because the original thing that they shot was they did the group hug. They got really close to the edge and she threw the canned tornado in there. That's why they set up the canned tornado in the beginning because it was supposed to come back.
Oh,
and that was going to defeat it. But then on the day, they're like, wouldn't it make more sense if they threw the bowling ball down there? It's a sentient bowling ball. And I think it works better.
Yeah, probably.
But so it destroys the psychofraculator, which saves the day. And then we cut to Tom Waits watching the news, and he's like, well,
setting off a siren in celebration.
What's going on?
I love that. Does psychofraculator work? I love how he's just super into that.
But then so the mystery men come out, and they're being interviewed, and they're like, hey, who are you? What did you do? And what's your name? And Kel's like, we're the super dudes. It's like, well, we're definitely not that. And then
we don't have a name yet.
The Sphinx, what does he say? No, we're the super group. Super squad. And then Jeanine Groffler's like, oh no, alliteration seems kind of hokey in this moment.
I love when the shoveler is like, you know, this one goes out to the common man, the person who has the really hard job, and they kind of go down the line. The lady at the DMV, and then it gets to Jeanine Groffler, and she's like, people who discover new forms of music and support independent film. Like, yeah, Jeanine.
Kel's like, people who remember all the music from really old commercials. Yeah. Shit like that. And then that's pretty much it. The newscaster says, well, whoever they are, the city owes a debt of gratitude to these mystery men. And that's where we get the title.
That's the title.
Leo Point moment.
Yep. Cut to black. And that's it. Hey, now you're an all-star, guys.
And that's a movie that Steve was so ecstatic to get brought up. And you can tell because he just had all these deleted scenes on deck. So thank you so much to Julia P. I'm glad that you won the contest because you were able to give us the joy of revisiting Mystery Men.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I'm excited because now we have a Patreon tier where people get to do this all the time. And so who knows what we'll end up getting forced to watch that I normally wouldn't watch again sometimes. And then it's like, oh, that was fun. So excited for that.
Did you have a good time, buddy?
I had a great time. And there was no way in hell I would ever purposefully rewatched this movie from 1999. I'm nothing against, it's just where I'm at. I mean, I got hundreds of movies in my watch list. I've never seen Citizen Kane. So like Mystery Men's not on my rewatch list, right?
Sure.
Now it is
better than Citizen Kane.
For sure. This is my rosebud. Spleen. Follow us on Twitter at StreamThingPod. Subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/streamingthings. Email us at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. Grah!
Grah!
Grah! YouTube. I forgot to do the plugs. It was my only fucking note.
Oh my God.
StreamingThingsPod@gmail.com. Grah! Can't redo it.
Let's do that one. Let's do that again with you first, and then we'll do the craw.
Craw?
No, so you do the plug first.
Follow us on Twitter.
Then the craw is the ending.
You want to like really, really fucking nail it.
Yeah. Craw. Craw. Let's do it all three together. Craw.
Wait, together or
craw?
Craw. Craw. Andy. What the fuck, Andy?
What? You went first. I went second every other time.
That's fair. We didn't establish an order. He's 100% right. We did not. So we'll go you, then me.
This will be at the blooper section. I'm keeping this fucking
in. This
is
the deleted scene. Steve's going to fucking love
deleted
this one.
Deleted scene.
The new patron shout out. Thank you for your patronage.
You have a beautiful voice.
I don't think I do.
Aw.
It's pretty good.
Don't be so hard on yourself, buddy.
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Would smash. Well, we're doing patron shout outs differently this time, guys. We're going to do them once a month, and this recording will last the entire month. But in this month, we will go over the new patrons that sign up for the month and also the patrons who upgraded their tiers that month as well. Are you excited to find out the cool people that did such a thing?
I'm very excited.
All right. So let me introduce to you our brand new patrons for the Try Before You Deny tier. It's Aaron Layton and Crystal Trujillo.
Woo! Hi, friends.
In the Marty P VIP tier, it's Josh and Anna.
Marty B.
What did I say?
Marty P.
Oh, Marty B. Excuse me. How fucking dare you? I've been here for how long and you don't know my name.
The entire time, sir.
You've given me a terrible wound.
What if Marty B's like a Marty P, man?
Well, our new chocolate pudding producers, we have Alex Fisher, Brittany Deck, Enver Psycho. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm surely not.
Probably not, man.
Jen L, Jess R, Mandy Spears, Shannon Myers, and Zach Suthers. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, friends.
Thanks, Puchachos.
And our final new patron in the Friends Don't Lie tier, we have Colin P. Frost. Thank you, Colleen.
Another P, man.
Thank you so much. Now we go into the upgrades. That's
the road less traveled, man.
These are the people that gave us money before, and we thought, hey, what about more money for these guys? Because they're just so giving and full of mirth.
Mirth,
all of it. These people upgraded to the Try Before You Deny tier.
Try Before You Deny, man.
Andrew Gray, Jen Robinson, Casey McCain, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate Kiki, and Will Nash. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
And then these people upgraded to the Marty B VIP section. Thank you, A. Wells, Adam Horn, Adam Raymond, R.K. Shenanigans, Barb, Caleb Jeter, Carmelita Valdez McCoy. I love saying your name fully, Carmelita, because it's so cool. Chloe Richardson, Cindy Miller-Ray, Elizabeth Hubbard, Enza, Jimmy Gadd, John Madden, like the John Madden. Isn't he dead?
Yes.
Well,
he's not dead, but he's on the cover of Madden 23.
And now he's here to write X's and circles over footage of football players. Thank you, Jadinglage. Thank you,
Jadinglage.
Morgus. Thank you, Katie Blair. Kayla Higgins.
it's me.
The French Oak. thank you, Lisa L. Marcus Mills. Michelle Moore. Nick Nolte. Nicole Cassis. Paola Garcia. Sean Callahan. Stephanie Pagalis. Suzanne Rode and Sydney Day. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
And good night.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.